So last week we were discussing Yerushalmi. I don't know if you remember that. Tosis at the beginning of Eli Naris quotes Yerushalmi. And the question is, a Ktani Yisoma. In other words, if we cut out the father from the Knas, if he's not an element in the equation, then in a case of Mefuta, whether or not her agreement, her consent, constitutes a Mechila, and therefore there's no Knas, this seems to be two opinions in the Yerushalmi. So let's see where he quotes the Yerushalmi here. Okay. This should be, if I'm not mistaken, on page Ayin Tes. Let me just double check that. Yeah. So if you have the page Ayin Tes, you'll see on the bottom he quotes the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi itself is based on the Mishnah of Yisoma. Or alternatively, even if she's not a Yisoma, maybe her father is out of the picture because she was Nisarsa v'Nisgarsha. And once she was Nisarsa, she leaves the Rishus of her father, and even after Gerushin, she doesn't return to the Rishus of the father. She's still a Naira Besula. And the question is, does she collect Knas in the case of Mefuta? So the Yerushalmi quotes two opinions on this. The more familiar opinion is Rabbi Ovin, and he says that when it says in the Mishnah that a Yisomish and his Arsam and his Garsha does not collect, and the Mefata is Potter, it's only referring to Boshes Upagam. But as far as Knas is concerned, Eino Yechola Limchol, she cannot be a Mocheles on the Knas.
Does that
Knas go to the father? Oh, again, so let me go over the two cases. One case is she's a Yisoma, her father is gone. Okay. And the other case is Nisarsa v'Nisgarsha, which again is a Machlokas, two versions in Rabbi Akiva, but according to the Mishnah's version of Rabbi Akiva, she leaves her, the Rishus of her father with Erisin, and even after Gerishin, she doesn't return to the Rishus of the father. So he's out of the picture. Now she's a Mefuta, so the question is, when the father is neutralized, if he's right out of the picture, and she consented, does that exempt him, the Mefata, from payment of the Knas? So that's two days in the Yerushalmi. So even though the order in the Yerushalmi is first Rabbi Mona and then Rabbi Ovin, I started in the reverse, because Rabbi Ovin seems to be the well-accepted view that her agreement does not remove the Knas, even though the Mishnah says that he, the Mefata, is Potter, but that's only as far as Boshes Upagam is concerned. But as far as Knas is concerned, her Mechila is not meaningful. And Yerushalmi asks, why is her Mechila not meaningful? And Yerushalmi answers, V'chi yesh adam mochel al davar shalo bershusa. That's the language of the Yerushalmi. So all this you'll see on the bottom of page Ayin Tes. Yerushalmi quotes another opinion, and that's Rabbi Mana, and he holds that Mefata doesn't collect Knas at all, and the question is why. Yerushalmi doesn't address the question of explaining Rabbi Mana. It explains Rabbi Ovin by saying, V'chiyesh adam mochel al davar shelo b'reshuso. How can he be mochel on something that's not in his reshus? But as far as Rabbi Mun is concerned, there's no relation. The Gemara in Yerushalmi doesn't relate to this question. So the one who took this on to try to explain Rabbi Mun is the Ran. And the Ran offers two different approaches as to how to understand Rabbi Mun. One approach is to compare this case of a Ktana Mefuta, again Mefuta meaning that the father is out of the picture, to a case of Kosev Larusoso Din Udvarim Einli Benachasayech Bechayech Ubimoseich, and this you'll see on page Pei, the first major paragraph. And that's a Sugya later on in Masechta Ksuvos on Daf Pei Gimel, so the man writes a document when he marries this woman. Again, we're talking about Erusin. And in the document, he says, Dinu Dvarim Ein Li B'Nechasayach. And normally, a husband will inherit his wife. So that here in this case, when they enter into the chuppah to Nesu'im, it was on the basis of his statement, Ein Li Dinu Dvarim Ein Li B'Nechasayach. And as a result, he doesn't collect HaYerusha. Yerusha will go to her father, but not to him. And the Gemara says that the reason for that is because Nachla Bolo Li Adam Makom Acher, Adam Masna Le Shalo Yirashena. What does it mean, Nachla Bolo Li Adam Makom Acher? Achshav Eino Roila. At this point, she's only his Arusa. There's no Yerusha in the case of Arusa. It says She'ero Zuishto, which means that he only inherits her after Nisuin. But nevertheless, he enters into the Nisuin with this agreement in which he was in which he gave up his rights to inherit her. So when he enters into the Nesu'in, he enters into the Nesu'in without rights of Yerusha. And that's based on Nachla Bolo Liodom Imakom Acher Eino Roila. And therefore he removes himself from Yerusha. So we want to understand in this first approach of the Ran, what is the Ran's analogy between a mefuta who consents to have this relationship, and as a result she removes herself from the collection of the knas, again when the father's out of the picture, and the case of dinu dvarim ein li b'nechasayach that a man writes to his arusa? So it seems from this that there's a concept called mechila. Again, we're going to try to give it a more precise name, but right now we'll give it a kind of a general name called mechila on something that's not yet bershuso. Now normally if I want to be mochel, I have to have rishus over something. Let's say for example you owe me a chov, I own that chov, I could sell that chov on the open market, and therefore I could be mochel the chov. But here we're talking about something that hasn't yet come into existence, hence the shita that we started with Rabbi Ovin, that there is no mechila on her part because the knas doesn't exist until Hamad Bedin. Before Hamad Bedin, it's Eino Bershusa. If it's Eino Bershusa, she can't be Mochelis. That's the shita of Rabbi Ovin. What does Rabbi Mona hold? Says the Ran, Rabbi Mona holds that she can be Mochelis before it's in her Rishus, meaning before the Hamad Bedin, on the knas. And how does this operate? Again, you could ask this in two ways. Number one, you could ask, how does it operate in the case of Dinu Dvar Mein Liben Chasayach? How can he remove himself from being Mochel, his rights of Yerusha, when he's not even married to her yet? It's only Erusin, and there are no rights yet. It's not Pershut, so he doesn't have the status of a Yorich. And then you could ask it in another way, how could the Sheet of Rabbi Mana be that a man is completely exempt from his payment of Knas because of HaMechila? But it's again a Dover Sheina Bershusa. How does Mechila work on a Dover Sheina Bershusa? So if you take a look at the end of this paragraph, he introduces a brand new concept. You have to take out the word Mechila. Sami Mikan. Let's substitute a different word for Mechila. And that's called Siluk. Now, there are two major differences between Siluk and Mechila. First is that whereas Mechila could not operate on a Dover Sheina Bershusa, Siluk is meaningful even on a Dover Sheina Bershusa. Hence, in the case of an Arusa, he could be Mesalik himself from his Zechus Yerusha, and that's called Siluk, even though he's not yet a Yoresh because it's before Nesu'in. So Siluk works on something that hasn't yet come into existence. So too, in the case of a Mefuta, according to the Shita Rabbi Mana, she can be misalik herself from her rights to the knas, even though it's future rights. You know, until Amar Bedin, she has no claim to any knas. And the second difference between siluk and mechila is that whereas mechila is non-reversible, once the mechila is chal, you can't change your mind afterwards. Siluk lends itself to what we call charata or chazara, that there is such a thing as chazara min asiluk, Again, there are certain regulations that apply here. It's not just a hefkervelt. It's not just unended, an open-ended thing. But as long as the siluk is still futuristic, meaning, let's say, in the case of an arusa, up until the moment of nisuin, that siluk is meaningful. The chazara from siluk is meaningful, I meant to say. That although he was mesalik himself from the arusha, he can decide, I regret that I did so. He can rescind his original siluk. There's no such thing as rescinding a mechila.
Mechila relates to another person, whereas siluk relates to your relationship to whatever it is. It's like hefker.
Right.
You can throw it out, you can pick it back up. But if you give it to somebody, you obviously can't take it back.
Right. Well, you're 100% right, because I'll prove that what you say is correct, because siluk, you can be chozer from the siluk, but only until it relates to someone else. As once she's already been zocha in her yerusha by virtue of the siluk, there's no longer chazar from the siluk. So just to look over here again, I just want to point out that you should underline the text if you don't mind.
Could you just repeat that last thing?
Yeah, that, I just want to repeat it inside. Okay. Inside, very important. He says the following: Bir advarin. At the end of the paragraph, umavur. Again, I photocopied this, and not for naught. I hope I wasn't just wasting my time by photocopying this, because what I want you to do is to see it inside. But I guess that doesn't impress you. Okay, fine. Anyway, I'll just say what I feel, you know, and everything is voluntary here. Anybody who shows up to shir, it's all voluntary. So, you know, if you want to go on a tiul, if you want to go on AACI, if you want to go to the fjords, you have no commitment here whatsoever. It's all Torah Lishma, right?
Yeah,
it's Torah Lishma. In any event, so he says, Ubir Advarn. We're on page Pei, and the last few lines in the paragraph that starts Umevur. And he writes, Ubir Advarim, Dinehi Delo Mahani Mechila, Din Mechila, Kevin Shadayin Lo Zotzabo, right? Hazachia in the Knas, and at what point does that Chiv Knas emerge as something that she has rights to, that's only after Hamad Abedin? She's not yet gotten to Hamad Abedin. And therefore, ain't all the mochel b'dover shein rishuso. Says the Ran, that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about mechila. When she was a mafuta and she agreed to, and she consented to have this ma'isa, she's not mochelis on the knas, because the knas is the dover shein rishuso. Mikol makom, nevertheless, there's a new halacha here. Mahani, her agreement, her consent works and operates midin siluk, not midin mechila. And here's the radical change and the significance of siluk as opposed to mechila. The adam yachol l'salik atzmo mikol zchus sheomedes lipo lo. So you have, I call it futures. You know, you're going to have a zchus in, she will have a zchus in the knas. He, in the case of an oris, will have a zchus after nesuin in the yerusha. There's something called a siluk. Siluk means I'm removing myself from this zechus. Zechus is something that the Torah, the halacha, gives to me. It's a gift, and I have to receive the gift. I can receive it in one of two ways. I can receive it actively, or I can receive it passively. But once I have to receive it, and this zechus has to come to me, and I have to be zocha in this zechus, I have the right to be mesalik myself. I'm not here. I'm not willing to accept it. No one's home. You know, you deliver me the gift. I'm not home. I'm not going to receive the gift. So when is this chus that's coming to me in the future? The Ran says I could be masalik myself from that chus. Now in the next paragraph, and then Herb, the floor is yours, he says that in a case of siluk, the Marit, one of the great Sephardic Rishonim at the end of the period of Rishonim, about 6 centuries ago, he claims that yachol lachzor bo mi siluk. As opposed to mechila, with mechila immediately when somebody is mochel, the chov is completely gone. It's completely has completely evaporated. You can't resuscitate a chov once it's been removed by mechila. So there's no chazor from mechila. But in the case of siluk, says the Marit, there is a chazor from siluk, because nothing's really happened yet. It's all theoretical. The schus has only become meaningful with nisuin, and right now it's before nisuin. So as long as it's before nisuin, he can do his siluk thing, and then he can rescind his siluk, And therefore, it comes out according to Marit, and this you'll see on the sixth line in this paragraph of Pashtus, he says, in the case of a mefuta, and we're saying that according to this approach of the Ran, a mefuta is misalekes as atzma from her future rights to the knas, is tuchala isha lachzor me'asiluk ad shas hamadu b'din. Right, until hamadu b'din. Once it's hamadu b'din, then he the mefuta has been zochen his knas. You know, the schus no longer exists because there was a siluk. But up until then, before the moment in which that siluk is final, in which that schus actually becomes a dorish and bershu, so up until that moment, he can reacquire his schus by being chosen both from the siluk. And this is something that irritated the mind of the Ktzos HaChoshen, which you'll see here on page Pei Aleph in the first paragraph. The Ktzos was not willing to assume that you can somehow be chozerbo from a siluk. And you'll actually see this also on the bottom of page Pei, on the left bottom, where he quotes the Be'er, the B'nei Yaakov. So that's the first approach of the Ran. So we'll call it the siluk approach of the Ran. Now we get to the second approach of the Ran. And here the Ran, which you'll see on the left column, number Yud Zayin on page Pei, quotes the Ramban. And the Ramban has a different paradigm here. He's not going to use the paradigm of Ksubas Pei Gimel, of Ainli Dinu Dvarim Ainli Bin Chasayich, but rather the paradigm of a Sugya in Masechta Makis. And the Sugya Masechta Makis is talking about the laws of Nezikin. And the question that the Sugya addresses is, can the Nizak remove Chiyuve Mazik even before the Maisa Hezek was implemented? Meaning, if the Maisa Hezek was implemented, then the Nizek is in the driver's seat. There's a Chov to compensate him for the Nezek. He could say, I'm Mocha L'Chov. But what about before the Nezek even took place? And that's the Gemara in Makkos. And the Gemara in Makkos, it also appears in Sanhedrin, says, Ha'omer Kra Shirayim Shali Vihi Poter. He tells his friend to rip up the shirayim, so the Maisa Hezek hasn't even been taken place yet. Vi potter, you'll be potter. And the din is that, again, what rights does the nizak have to potter up the mazik when the hezek hasn't even occurred yet? And the Gemara says that he's potter. Says the Ran, in the name of the Ramban, here too, kevet shenisratzeis b'shas bia. In other words, the Ramban is identifying the Bia as a Maisa Mazik, and even before the Maisa Mazik, she consented to have that Maisa done to her. Is Afal Pishaina Zocha Beknasa Chasamar Bedin, nevertheless, Bishas Bia, she can say, you know what? Do this Bia without your incurring any obligations, any penalties, any payments. And that becomes a case of Krashi Rayam Shali. Does anybody see a difference between the two cases?
Yes.
Go ahead, Herb.
The original Gemara, when he says, Ainli Dvarim.
Are you going back to the first round? Okay, fine. I was already, my head was wrapped around the second round, but let's go back to the first round. So the first round, he says, it's like, Ainli Dvarim Bin Chasar.
By the Arusha. What stage is that?
Right now it's Arison.
I don't mean that.
Oh, what do you mean?
Has the Manchil or the Nochel, whatever you want to call him, has he died already?
No, he's saying this to his wife.
Right.
And she's alive and well, Baruch Hashem.
And there's nothing there. I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about wherever she's going to get the Nachla from.
So that has to do with Pishnaim and Bechar, but in general Nachla, we're talking about something called Ro'ui.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So when he says, Ainli Dvarimach, does that mean that there's something pending?
I don't know what you mean by pending, but her father has given her a dowry, and he wants to inherit that dowry.
Okay.
And he says, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks.
Okay.
I like the fact that the Torah has given me rights to collect that money after you die, but I want to remove myself from that dowry. And that's called, in the language of the Ran, Siluk.
Right, but the dowry is there.
It's there. Very much real. It's very much there.
So how can you compare it to Mufuta, which hasn't even had been Hamon Abedin?
Oh, the dowry is there, but who owns the dowry? She owns the dowry. He, the Oros, has no...
But the Kenas is not even there.
Well, again, this, what he says is that Siluk works on is Schus. The Schus is there. Right. Why is the Schus there? Because once he implements that Maisa Pitu,
I understand that.
Then he's going to have to pay, that Knas.
To be Masalik,
we need the Yamana Pitin
to
establish.
To be Masalik, you have to have something to be Masalik.
Oh, so that's called the Schus. So that's the Ran's thesis, is that there's a Schus to the Knas that emerges with the Maisa Beer. So too with Erisin, he has a schus that when he marries her with Nisuin, he will inherit her. So therefore, the Ran says in his first approach that to the same extent that he can be Masalik himself from his future schus in Yerusha, she can be Masalik herself from her future schus in the Knas. That's the first approach of the Ran. I'm very fascinated by the second approach in the Ran, because the Ran in his second approach is defining the Knas of Mefuta as Nezikin. And I'm wondering if it really is Nezikin. What do I mean to say? Nezikin is really a monetary arrangement, so to speak, between the Mazik and the Nizak. The Torah says that as a result of this Hezek, you have rights to collect damages, to collect compensation. Therefore, the Gemara says that since the rights to collect compensation are a result of the Maisa Hezek, the Nizak could already have an arrangement with the Mazik that this, from my perspective, this is not a Maisa Hezek. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you will not incur any chiyuv, any obligations for compensation through this Maisa Hezek. That's called Kra Shiraim Shali Vihi Poter. And therefore, even though the tashlumen for the shirayim, for the mazik, for the nezik is not yet in existence, but the maisa, the action of hezek which generates that chiyuv, is in existence. So, as far as that action is concerned, the nezek has a right to say that I don't view this as a maisa hezek. The Ran wants to jump based again on the Ramban and conclude that if she says to the Mefata, from my perspective, go ahead and do this action, she's accepting it, it's not a Maisa Hezek, and therefore he doesn't have to pay Knas. But if you would have asked me, I would have said that that's not how Knas operates. Knas is not a Maisa Hezek. The Torah says that for the beer that you did, you have to pay a Knas. Does she have rights to waive that? I mean, she can't deny the fact that he had that beer with her. Again, the Ran is assuming the following equation, that Bia is a Maisa Hezek, Knas is payment for that Maisa Hezek. Right? So in Maisa Hezek, a Nizak has a right to say, well, this, for me, go ahead. You know, I give you the green light, this is not a Maisa Hezek, I'm not going to collect any damages for you. And that's a binding statement. But and therefore the Ran applies this to the case of Bia, that the Bia is a Maisa Hezek and she has rights to collect Knas from the Maisa Hezek. So she could say to him, look, I don't see this as a Maisa Hezek. I absolutely approve of your Bia. Just like the case of Kirashirayim. Go ahead and rip the Shirayim. That's the Ran's equation. I'm just perplexed about this because I don't know, you know, again, Torah Yiva Limon and Yitzorach, I don't know that the Knas is a penalty for Maisa Hezek. The Maisa Bia has a certain immodesty to it, if you call it, and something that the Torah wants to object to, and this is not a free for all. You know, this is not a free for all that she could say to him, oh well, you know what, your beer is not a beer. There's nothing despicable about your beer. I waive it. Do it. You know, let's go through with it. Let's have a consent, and therefore you don't pay knas. The beer itself is enough to generate the knas. That's what I'm suggesting.
The problem in general is that the Knas is something external. The Torah placed upon him the Knas.
Right.
So how do you have a schus to be mochel or to be masalik or in any of these cases?
Right.
They have that, it shouldn't apply to her to make a decision one way or the other.
Right.
The Torah places it upon the mefata to pay.
correct?
And why isn't it much?
In other words, you know, in the sense of beinonu l'chaver, you know, nizikin is like beinonu l'chaver. You're being mazik me. I'm the nizak. I have rights to demand that you compensate me.
Right.
But if I go ahead and say, well, you know, this is not a hezek for me. I don't consider it hezek, and you don't have to compensate me. That's binding. But here in the case where the Torah says, you know, your act of bia is an act which generates a knas. I don't know how the Ran, again, it's the Ramban, you know, how he has the right to compare that to Kras Exclusive Potter. I don't know. It's a knas for the beer. So I don't understand this Ramban. I'm just telling you.
He,
the Mishkanos Haroim, loves this Ramban. You know, because he sees this Ramban as an alternative to Siluk. And why is he so? I just wanted to explain why he has vested interest to avoid Siluk, because he wants to defend the Marit, and the Marit says that Siluk is reversible, and therefore she could be Choseris Ba from Siluk. Nowhere do we find in the sugya of Mafata that she could decide at the very last minute, no, I want to collect the Knas. If there is Mechila on the Knas, that's irreversible. So the Mishkanos Haroim is very eager to set up another approach, an alternative approach, which he calls the Ramban's second answer of Kra es Shirayim Shalivi Potter. I'm just pointing it out to you, but the logical connection here, I think, is a very loose one. You know, it's a loose wire over here.
And even for the Siluk, answer is a problematic to me.
Well,
it shouldn't have anything to do with her mechila or her ability to misalik. It has nothing to do with her. It has to do with the fact that he did something wrong, and he has a
right. No, so then, Rabbi, maybe we have to put the money in escrow or give it to Bezdin or something like that. But she doesn't. She, you know, her rights to collect the knas are recognized by the Torah. She could be misalik herself from those rights. Now you're pointing out, you know, let's beat this guy till he's blue in the face and let him pay the knas to Bezdin, and maybe we'll have to you know, feed the aniyim of Klal Yisrael with that knas. I don't know. That's a good point. But as far as her rights to collect the knas, Siluk is meaningful.
If
you know,
the father were in the picture, could he be mochel or misalik?
Yes. That we, everybody seems to agree. Yeah, that's not an issue. The issue whether she has the rights of
Torah, then the kenas that the Torah places on him is not an external kenas. It's dependent on the person receiving it.
Well, again, no. It could be like you're right that maybe if the father is misalik himself, maybe we would force the ma'anis or the mafat, I should say, to put it in escrow. I don't know. Yeah, we haven't gotten to that question yet. That's going to come up, but right now, in terms of the father's ability and his chus mamon to collect the knas, he could be misalik himself from that.
So by shloshim shlevet is a knas.
Herb, I can't deal with shloshim shlevet. Sorry. You know, when we get to shloshim shlevet,
knas in general. Knas in general has a concept of mamon.
He's assuming that your rights to collect the knas are similar to the rights of the nizak to collect from Maisa Hezek.
Right.
So if the Eved or whoever it is who has to collect this knas would say, go ahead and do it to me, you know, bang me over the head, knock my tooth out, so he wouldn't be able to collect the knas.
There's always a concept of
now, what would do with the knas, I don't know, you know, that's a different.
There's always a concept of moment by knas. I mean, this is not far-fetched.
Correct. Every knas gives you a right to collect a knas, and the question is, as a nizak, and you've been impaired, so to speak, you've been affected, you've been injured by this action, you have a right to say, this action is fine with me. That's the Ramban. The Ramban Shita.
What right does the father or the daughter have to go against what the Torah said? Torah says the guy has to pay a fine. Kenas.
Right.
You say you don't have to pay a kenas. Aren't you going against the chiyuv of the Torah?
Well, again, you know, there are two dimensions to the kenas. There's one dimension, as you said before, as a penalty for his despicable act. There's another dimension that gives her rights to collect that kenas, or in the case of the father to collect that kenas. But again, those are monetary rights. You know, that's a schus mamon. It could be that there's another dimension.
Why do you say there has to be a schus mamon? The kenas itself, according to your first svara there, he has to pay a kenas for the despicable act that he did. Period.
Right.
And the Bezdin has to be machayev him to pay.
Right.
Where the money goes is a separate issue.
Excellent. So right now we're focusing on whether the money has to go to her. That's our discussion today. Again, you know, later on we'll have a discussion, does he have to put it in escrow? You know, that's going to come up later on. But as far as her rights to collect the knas, she could be mochel.
You're assuming that she has rights to collect. He, the father, that there are rights there.
Right. Otherwise, we don't understand the Yerushalmi. Keep in mind, Rabbi, that even the Man D'Omar, that's Rabbi Ovin, who says that there is no mechila, the only reason he says so is because we have to wait till Amar B'Din. Meaning, what happens for Shas Bia is premature because ain't other mochal dover shayna b'rshuso. But fundamentally, everyone in the Yerushalmi agrees that there is mechila. The problem is, you can only have mechila on a dover b'rshuso. That's where the Ran came up to explain Rabbi Ovin in the Yerushalmi. He says there's a concept called siluk, that if there's going to be a future schus to collect mammon, you could be misalik yourself from that schus. In the second approach, he already assumes an equation between this schus and the schus of a nizak to collect compensation. And I'm saying that's not necessarily so. Your schus is based on the despicable act that was done to your body, you know, to your physical whole body, and that has nothing to do with nizikin. That's not really a compensation for the suffering and the nezek that was caused to you. It's a different kind of halach entirely. Now, if you take a look in the paragraph on page Pei, Dibra Maskel v'nechleku achronim, he comes up with a pretty radical idea to explain this Ramban. And again, I think you may have been here when I mentioned it before. I'm always very inhibited about the, I think there's a word that's used left, right, and center, and I think it's overly used, it's almost abused, and that's the word lemafreya.
Yeah.
And he has a Mishnah Lamelech who wants to understand this Ramban based on a concept called lemafreya. And he says the following, that even though har rishus over the knas is chal at the time of Hamad Bedin, but lemafreya tzchal from the Shas Bia. Do you remember this?
Right.
This is a Mishnah Melech. Again, the Mishnah of Rome has no issue with this Mishnah Melech. He buys it hook, line, and sinker. I don't know. Lemafreya to me means that the chiyuv itself is a result of a certain action. Like, for example, in Ezekiel, I understand lemafreya. What it means is that the mazik is chayav from the time the hezek. And I can prove that to you in many different ways. He's chayav. The only thing is, we need Amar B'Din to establish that chiyuv. And once we establish that chiyuv, you can apply the principle of lemafreya. I have no qualms about that. But that's not true in the case of a knas.
Why?
In the case of a knas, we need bezdin, and I'll prove it to you. The entire chiyuv is dependent upon and created by bezdin. How do I know that bezdin creates the knas? First of all, I can prove it to you from the fact that it's a different kind of bezdin than a classic bezdin for dinei mamonos. In knas, we have a loch of mumchin, we have a loch of ein donin knasos bebavel. There are many different requirements to establish a bezdin for a knas. It's not lemafreya that's for shaslechiv. Secondly, the Gemara in Masechta Makkos says that in the case of knas, there's a chiyuv of Edim Zomimim, even if the Mazimim will tell you that the Maisa took place on a different day. Why? In the case of the Zikin, if let's say the two Edim testify that Reuven was Mazik Shimon, then two Edim say Mono Aisim, and then they add, but Reuven was Mazik Shimon, just at a different place at a different time, then the Edim are exempt from paying under the law of Kasha Zoman. Why? Because then we're going to apply the principle of Mafreya. Then Enofinami, they were already testifying and somebody was chayav that sum of money. But in the case of a knas, like for example, Kefil Shalganov, the Gemara says we don't apply the principle of Mafreya. And therefore the Edom will have to pay. It's only if the second pair of Edom would say that there was a Hamada Bedin before the first Edom, then we would say he's being made against the Gabra who's already chayav. But you see very clearly that the creation of the Chiyuv is in Bezdin. I'm not going to say Lamafreya. I'm not going to say that the Chiyuv was already Chal at the time of the Bia, such that her consent to the Bia is a Mechila on something that's a Dover Bershuso. It's not Bershuso. When does she have a claim to this Knas? When Bezdin creates that Knas. And that's called Hamad Bedin. Okay, Rabbi, I'll say again, I'm not, you know, you're the jury, you know, you decide. The Mishnah Melech doesn't need Berzon's Haskama. I mean, you know who the Mishnah Melech was. Anybody remember his name? I'm just curious. A little history here.
Rosnas,
correct. He was a Turkish Jew. He was the original Sfaradim. You know, not the... Okay, whatever. I don't want to sound any little political. But he spoke Ladino. You know, saying this was the real... This is the real McCoy. The Rav said about the Mishle Melech that he was one of the few Jews who wore a turban that was a big lamb. Now again, that might not sound like very, very impressive to you, but if you know the Rav, that's like a tremendous accolade that someone who wore a turban was a big lamdan. And he said about the Machne Ephraim wore a turban, he was a big lamdan. And about the Divrei Emes, he was also a Turkish Jew. He said about him that he was a big lamdan. I mean, those were in my years of the Shia, those were the only three Sfaradim that the Rav elevated to Rav Chaim's level. By the way, there weren't too many Ashkenazim who knew that word either. So I don't even think the number reached the number three, you know, say, of Jews who wore yarmulkes and didn't wear turbans. Rav Kivega was in the loop. The Shachin Taz was okay. Shagasaria was okay. The Nodav Yehuda, I never heard him quote the Nodav Yehuda, except when Rav Chaim disagreed with the Nodav Yehuda. That's all. Oh, the Minchas Chinuch was in the Pnei Yeshua did not exist. Which, you know, I have to tell you, it's a long time since I was in the Rav Shia, so I've studied a lot of Pnei Yeshua. Pnei Yeshua is amazing. But he didn't have the style of Rav Chaim. He was before Rav Chaim, so he didn't have that Gavra Chefza lingo. But trust me, the Pnei Yeshua was a big lamb. Anyway, getting back to this, so we have here the Mishle Melech. Now,
could you possibly say that the Mafreya, or the Mishle Melech, is saying that the Mafreya has to do with the Nezek part of Tas? I don't know the right word to use. And the fact that in Dinah bubble means that you can't collect the Nezik.
Right, so the Nezik part, actually, Yerushalmi says everybody agrees she can be Mochel on. That's called Pagam Boshes.
So I'm saying the Mafreya, therefore, would go on the Nezik part.
Right, but he's tried to explain that day in the Yerushalmi that holds the Mafreya is on the Knas, not on the Boshes of Pagam, less mind the Polik, that in a case of Mafuta, you don't pay for Boshes of Pagam. Right. Again, unless the father's in the picture. But I'm saying if the father's out of the picture, that's called a Yisoma, there's no payment of Boshes Supergam. Let's mind the poet. That's not even a Havamina. The whole thrust of what we're discussing today is not Nezikin, it's Knas. It's the 50 Shkolim that he has to pay. Now, on page Pei Aleph, you'll see the following. He says... Again, there are a number of paragraphs here on page Pei Aleph, and just trying to see for, you know, in terms of the time period that we have, what we can focus on. Okay, fine. So the Ketos HaChoshen, which is on the top of the page, that we already more or less covered for now. He's got a problem with this Bnei Yaakov. He doesn't believe that she can be Choseresbar from the Siluk. Okay, that's fine. Oh, then there's a paragraph that starts Venira de Bir Dvarov, and he says the following, that the Mechila here, we're going back now for a moment to the Ran's first approach. This Mechila is on a Schus, correct? The Chiv Knas is not just a Chiv Tashlumin, but there's also Schus Shezichza Torah Litovea, that the Tovea's schus to collect knas. Yeah. That's what he says. On that schus, there's something called mechila, which we defined as siluk. Okay, fine. Now, let's get to the Ran's second approach. In the Ran's second approach, there's an equation, an analogy between har mechila on knas and omer kra shirayim shalivi potem. And he says the following. He says that in the case of Krash Yirayim Shalivi Poter, there's also going to be a Zchus Tviya. That Zchus Tviya is inherent in the Maisa Hezek. And by analogy, in the case of Bia, in the case of Mafata, there's going to be a Zchus Tviya that's inherent in this Bia itself. And kra shirai shlivi pata means that there's a mechila on that zchus tefila. It gets very similar to the Ran's first approach. I would suggest that in this paragraph, ulefi zeh, he's really reiterating the Ran's first approach. Now, in the paragraph Ulam, I think he's trying to argue that the Ran's second approach is radically different than his first approach. It's not just about mechila on his chus tevia, meaning when a person says krashi raim shalivi poter, it doesn't mean that in the Maisa Hezek there's some sort of chus tevia that's inherent, that's latent in the Maisa Hezek, and the Nizak has a right to, already before the Chiyuv has emerged, to be mochel on that zchus tvia, call it siluk. But rather, Ramban's language seems to indicate that the reason why a mafuta is potter from knas, meaning he's potter from knas in the case of mafuta, and also in the case of krash, yirayim shalivi potter, this is a radical change here. We're no longer dealing with mechila. There's no mechila in the case of vihi potter. It can't be a mechila because before the Maisa Hezek, there is no Zchus Tvia. So Mechila and Siluk are inapplicable concepts. But rather, there's a new concept called Mazik Birshus. Now again, we're not learning Bava Kama, but if we were learning Bava Kama, we would be at least superficially familiar with this concept called Mazik Birshus. Like, for example, the Gemara says that in a city where people have to clean up their drainage pipes, so there's a difference between Yemos HaGeshomim and Yemos HaChama. I'm just giving one example of Mazik Birshus. There are many examples of Mazik Birshus. In fact, Shein V'Regel is Potter Birshus HaRabim. Some say, again, the Gemara is not clear about this, but maybe it's Mazik Birshus. What does it mean? That once the Torah allows me to take my animal into Rishus HaRabim, notice we never found the Torah. Why did the Torah just say no animals in Rishus HaRabim? In today's society, that would, in contemporary life, that would make sense. You know, we don't allow animals down the public thoroughfares; it's too dangerous. But back in the day, when they were mostly agricultural type societies, the Torah never said you can't take your animal into Rishus HaRabim. Well, once the Torah says you're allowed to take your animal to Rishus HaRabim, what does an animal do? By definition, it eats. Up. Am I right? Oh, it eats. I remember watching a camel once. It was unbelievable. It did not stop eating. Camels have very strong jaw bones. So that you take an animal into Rishus HaRabim and you're allowed to do so, that's called Mazik Birshus. If you have to worry about you're carrying your bananas and the zebra comes along and wants to eat your bananas, you have to worry about your bananas. Don't blame the zebra for it. That's called Mazik Birshus. Or for example, Yemos HaGeshomim, the Gemara says there's so much rain, we had to allow people to drain out their water into the Rishus HaRabim. That's called Mazik Birshus. Now, what about a subjective Mazik Birshus? In other words, until now we've been talking about taking your animal into Rishus HaRabim, and that's relevant to all of us. We all have animals, we all want to take our animals into a public thoroughfare. Or, in the case of the drainage, we all want to drain our pipes into the Rishus HaRabim, even in the Rishus HaRabim in Yemos HaGeshomim. What is there such a thing as subjective Rishus, where I, as the Nizak, have a right to say to you that even though you are doing something that's going to cause me a hezek, I'm allowing you to do so? Did the Torah give me, as the Bailim, as the owner over this property, the right to say to you that you are a Mazik Birshus? Now watch the difference between Mechila and Mazik Birshus. In the case of Mechila, there is a Chiyuv, but the one who has rights to collect that Chiyuv is Mochel on his rights. Mazik Birshus is fundamentally different. Mazik Birshus means that this is not called a Maisa Hezek. A Maisa Hezek is considered when I violated my rights. I set up a fire where I shouldn't have set a fire. I took my animals where I'm not allowed to take my animal. I took my animal to your personal private property. Or in a case of a Shar Naghon, even if it's just a Rabbim, I had no right to do that. If it's a Shar Muad, whatever the case might be, that's already something that I violated Mazik, and therefore I have to pay the repercussions of damages. But then there's something called Mazik Birshus. And the language of the Ramban here in our Masechta seems to indicate that in the case of Kras Ksusi, he's being Mazik Bershus. Why? Because the owner of the Shirayim, he has ownership rights on this property, and part of the ownership rights is to say to someone else that you're not violating any right of mine by sending your arrows or by ripping my Shirayim. Why? Because I gave you rishus to do so. And if you take a look on top of Pei Aleph on the left side, he says, "Dlochi vaso Torah b'nezek." And here now the question of how do we make the analogy to Knas? Elahecha shamazik ovid midaita denafshe. He took the law into his own hands, the mazik, and he says, "I'm going to do what I have to do." And as a result, somebody lost money. He lost his property. Avol birshus bailim, part of the rights of an owner is that he can say to the mazik, you're not being mazik adaiti denafshe, but rather you're mazik birshus. So if you see the next four words, if you want to underline this, he says ein bo chiv klal. Here we don't have to get into the question, well, how could I be mochel a chiv tashluve nezikin before the maisa hezek? It's a mechil on a dovish alavaliola. That's irrelevant because there is no chiv at all. The chiv doesn't get off the ground. Why? Because that's called mazik pershus. The gevalga chiddush, the way the rabbi understands karashi rain v'potter, is that a person can create a subjective mazik pershus. Why? Because he's the owner of the object. Oh, now let's think, can we apply that to the case of knas, of what he called mafata? So take a look at the next paragraph, Vadayin. Vadayin tzarech bir b'tam hazeh. I don't understand the logic of the Ramban. D'lechora, lo domi l'krak susu, d'chiv mazik u'mitam. Why does the Torah say that if you're not a mazik bershus, right, it's over adai tinafshi, you have to pay for that? Shehiv sid mamon chavero. If the nature of the chiv tashlumin is because of hifsid mamon chavero, then I'm the owner of this mamon. I have a right to say that I don't care about your maisesik. I give you full green light to go ahead and do so. That makes it into mazik bershus. Oh, avol knas. I underline this. I don't know. Does it appear in your photocopy?
No.
Avol beknas, ein achiyuv mishum shehifsid la. He's not compensating her for a loss. I mean, that's good for boshes and for pagam. Elda Torah konsoso avur hamaisa shaasa. Rabbi, I think you can be excited about this. You could have written the text.
They were
I'll be the first one. You have to give me a signature, though. You know, I'll get the first reshon. You know what I'm saying? He says the following: "Av the knas ein achiyuv mishum shehifsid la." The payment is not a compensation for our hefsed, such that it comes under the laws of the zikin, and she can make it into a masik vershus. Ela Torah konsoso avur hamaisa shaasa. He doesn't add that little embellishment of the, I called it a despicable action, that he doesn't say. V'im kein, if the Torah is saying that you have to pay the knas because of the maisa shasa, is im kein ein aisha bailim. You know, she's a bailim on her own hefsev, but if the payment is not to replace her hefsev, she's not a bailim on this maisa. Litein lo rishus and make him into a mazik rishus. This has nothing to do with mazik rishus. The Torah finds this mice objectionable, and the Torah therefore says you have to pay a knas for such a mice shasa.
No right.
She has no right to say, "Oh, it's rishus." In other words, it's a little bit pardon the analogy. It's a little bit like suicide. You know, people say, "Why can't I take my own life? It's my life. I can give it up. I can terminate it." Name the Torah says, "Hashem aratz v'loa and neshamalav aguf shala." It belongs to Hashem. You're just the custodian of your life, of your body. But you don't have ownership over it. And certainly you don't have ownership over somebody else's body. So she doesn't have the right to say, you know what, you're not causing me a hezek, you're not calling me a hefsed, and therefore you don't have to pay. The payment is not because of her hefsed. That's what he says. I'm tempted to think that the Ramban held that this knas comes under the laws of nezikin. Otherwise, his comparison to kras ksusi is not a valid comparison.
You have the right to destroy property, your own property. You don't have a right to destroy.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Spiritual, right?
I can give you rights to destroy my own property. Right? That's not spiritual. That's not life itself. Do you follow what he, Yosef's making a good point? That I can say about my own property, this is my table, go ahead and break the table for me. Destroy the table. Why? Because it's totally mine. Hashem gave this to me. Hashem
aretz
umeloah.
It's a piece of wood.
What does it say? V'nasa l'dnei adam. What does it say?
Right.
So if you're going to say that knas is a zchus tviya, then we go back to the original premise of the Ran, that you could be mesalik yourself from a zchus tviya. But don't tell me that it's equal to or comparable to kras ksus. Excuse me. Now here, if you can, I'd like you to fast forward for a moment to page Pei Beis. And he has a... He has a third approach. So again, we have the following approaches. We say, number one, it's a mechila sila kind of thing, and therefore she cannot collect knas. Number two, it's somehow similar to mazik bershus. Again, we don't understand that Ramban, but that's the Ramban. And now we have a third approach. And this is Yesh Misha Kosav on Pei Beis. In the footnote, he quotes the Divrei Yecheskel. I think I mentioned to you the Divrei Yecheskel was Rashid in the Mir back in Litta. And he says the following. What the Ramban really means is the Hacha Adif Mikrak Susi. The Hasam Nasev Echefetz Maisa Nezek. V'lachein ein nesinas harishus mafkas toras mazik mimenu. So there's an objective maisa hezek in which he's destroying Shirayim. And therefore, there's a havamin at least to say that kras ksusi potter is not meaningful because havilekev masna al mashikosav v'torah. The Torah says that destroying property is considered an act of hezek. You can't change that. That's objective. That's engraved in stone. You want to change that, then you're creating a new definition of a Maisa Hezek, and the Torah never recognized your new definition. There's no Masna Masha Kosim B'Torah. Again, this is a big sugya, Masna Masha Kosim B'Torah, but not for us now. I will be Mefater, Kosim Ramban, let's look at the language of the Ramban, Shaloa Knas Bilvad Machlolo, Elagufa Masrolo, Lasos Ba Kiritsono, Vehi shegoremes viosa hakol. The Ramban is saying the following: that this is not like nezek, where you have an objective meisin nezek, and you have no right to change the rules, the ground rules of the Torah, and say, "Well, this is not a hezek." That's masna mashikos of the Torah, at least as a habamim. But in mefuta, the problem is the following: who was gorem this? This goof, this bias a goof, in other words, is it him or is it her? So the Ramban now has a radical new approach here to Mefuta. And he's saying that since she gave her consent, that's called Mesiras Gufalo. When the Torah says you pay a knas, that's because you usurped her goof and you used it kirtzoncha. You used her goof. That violation of her goof for your pleasure is considered a machayev that generates a chiyuv of knas. But in the case where she participates by consenting, then she's moseres gufa, and therefore it's not lasos ba kirtzono, but it's lasos ba kirtzona. And she is no less of a goremis than he is.
No less, but no more.
But again, that's enough to alleviate him of his of categorizing him as the gorem. Now the Ramban adds two words here. What is the Yosek Kli? What is the Ramban referring to now? when he adds V'yosek Kli. Anybody know what that means? This has to do with the difference between a Besula and a Be'ula. I don't know if you know this, Rabbi Hussai, but back in the day they made a special bracha on Be'ilas Besula. Did you know that? The Gaonim have...
So it goes by God.
I'm impressed, man. The question is why we don't say it today, but back in the day, this whole discussion, he's naked, he has to say bracha when he's naked, he has to say it before he takes, if it's an over lachsi, also if it's a bracha sheva, I mean, you got God's the business of him. But this bracha fell out of use. So you'll never hear the bracha today, I don't think, unless somebody's going back to the time of the Gaonim. I mean, you never know in today's world. But what is the essence of that bracha? The essence of that bracha is about asiyas kli. Why? Because it seems that as a result of the first be'ila, she becomes more of a kli for future be'ilos. Right? It opens up a Pesach. So the Torah says, you a gorem to make her into a kli. So for that you have to pay. The answer is, says the Ramban, no. She was gorem. She wanted to become a kli. So again, this is not called mazik bereshus. What we're saying is, and listen carefully to the language that I think rightfully so the Mishkan Sarom uses to explain the Ramban. He says the following, that lochiva Torah knas ella, in other words, when we talk about the Maisa Machayev of knas, it's only kshehu gorim. And again, Yosef, I think it means he's the singular gorim. In other words, he does it on his own. Okay, so now that her ratzon, it doesn't kick in, because it all depends upon the father. The father decides whether she will become a kli or not. So therefore, he is considered a gore. I will be a son of a foot when the father's out of the picture. He garma, I don't know, he adds the word akol, I don't know what he means by akol, but anyway, she made the decision that he should make her into a kli, and lekachiv klal. You see those three words? Lekachiv klal. Rabbi, look, if you're going to argue with this, you have to reinterpret the Ramban. You know what I'm saying? Because you could blame the Mishkan Sarom for saying Lekachiv Klal, but you can't blame the Mishkan Sarom for saying, this is the language of the Ramban, Shelo Aknas Bilvad Machalo Elagufo Masro Lo Lasas Bokir Tzono Vehi Agorem.
She's not a Lofuto.
What do you mean
she's not? She's a Kadesha, she's a Zona, whatever, you know. Yeah. How do you define Mefata? I mean, you're telling me that in the case of Mefata, there's a possibility that she's agreeing, so then it's no longer Mefata. It's not.
That's, I think, what the Ramban is saying, that since she agreed, it's not really Mefata. The Mefata means
if she agrees.
Right, and there's no knas at all. Oh, you're talking about a case where the father is in the picture?
No, forget that. Oh. It makes no difference.
Because if the father's not in the picture, then the chiv knas, says the Ramban, is because he's making her into a kli. He's the gorim. But in the case of Mefuta, there's no knas, and he's saying lo chayev klal. That's Mishkan Sarom, but I'm saying
because she was involved.
Yeah. Her consent means that she decided that she wants to become a kli.
What is it? There's no knas. Case of Mefuta.
Would be when the father's in the picture.
No, forget the father.
I don't know what you mean. Again, we're going according to the Yishalmi, who says that if the father's in the picture, there's no knas. There is a knas. If the father's out of the picture, there's no.
What did he do?
There's no knas. Is this yours? Can I? Herbs is yours?
It's not mine.
No. Oh, okay. So if it's not yours or yours, then it's here for the ELC.
What's the mice?
Knas.
Again, if the father's out of the picture, we're going according to Rav Ron and the Yishalmi, there is no knas, period. In a Mefuta, there is no knas. I is a parsha Mefuta, that's because there's a father. If you read the parsha in Mishpatim, you'll see it's all about paying the knas to the father.
For what? Why are you paying him? Why is there a achil on a kanas? What did he do wrong?
But she doesn't have the right to do that against her father's will. She's in the rishus of her father.
If the rishus of the father is only by a ketana.
No, even by Narit, it's been a rare base of via. She's in the rishus of her father. And for example, if a bird flies down into a chotzer, the father owns the bird.
About those 6 months, because if she's a katana, she has no das b'chalal.
Right.
You can't say it's her fault.
Excellent. So you're pointing out another thing, that the parsha of knas will apply even if the father's out of the picture, if she's a katana, according to the shitas chachamim, that a katana collects knas.
Correct.
Because then her das is totally irrelevant. You know, it's not recognized, it's not valid. That's a good point. Touche. But it, let's assume that knas. I'm sorry. Let's assume that there is no knas to a ketan. It's only knas to a nara. Okay. Now we have to ask ourselves: well, this mafata made her into a kli. Does he pay or does he not? So the Rabban is saying the following to explain that day in the Yerushalmi. Again, we don't paskin like that day in the Yerushalmi. The whole shiur is based on your, I don't want you to walk out at, you know, getting the wrong impression. But according to that day in the Yerushalmi, it all depends. If the father's in the picture, then her das is completely irrelevant. She's like a ketana. She's been a rebbe sovir. And therefore, the father did not give his consent to make her into a kli, and he pays the knas. If, on the other hand, the father's out of the picture, like Yisoma, Ketano, and Nisarsim, Nisgarsha, and so forth, then she's the one who determines, did he make her into a kli, or did she decide that she wanted to be made into a kli, if there's such a faith. That's what the Ramban seems to be saying. Now, in the next paragraph, he quotes Tosus in Sanhedrin, that ain't a time up to a mishum mazik brushus. Shai kosmu deicha shomeres beferish b'shas bia she'enem ochelus haknas yeshla knas. V'zelo yitochen elutam shemfat put mishum siluk omechila elutam de mazik brushus kevin shemosra lo gufa lasis ritzona lekachiv meikar klal malon she'enem ochelus. Again, here's a funny kind of case that Tosus takes up in Sanhedrin. It's a paradox. On the one hand, she says, I consent to have the beer. But on the other hand, I'm not mochel the knas. You're going to have the beer, but I'm going to collect the knas. So Tosfos says, in such a case, she collects knas. Frek the kasha, why? If according to the Ramban, the knas is only meaningful if she didn't participate in the final decision of making herself into a kli, then in this case, there is no knas. There's no chiv at all. So she could yell from now till doomsday, I'm not mochel on the knas. That doesn't help a bit. This Tosfos would prove that the din of mafut in a case where she's a yisom, etc., the father's out of the picture, there's no knas, is all based on mechila. So we assume, since she consented to the bia, that she gave up on the knas. It went from A to B. A indicates B. But if she's yelling and screaming, I don't want to be mochel on the knas, I'm going into this place with you, but on the condition that you'll pay me the knas, then there is no mechila. Then Tosfos makes sense that she can collect the knas, because the whole assumption was that if she consented to have the beer, therefore she was mochelis on the knas. Here she yells and screams, "I'm not giving up on the knas. You'll pay me the knas."
That's kadesha from mamash.
I don't know. Again, Rabosi, you're all asking me about kadesha. I don't know. You know, you got to get into the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid. What exactly is kadesha?
Selling.
I mean, the Ravid says mafkeres lakol. Mafkeres lakol is someone who hops around from man to man, pardon the expression. I'm being as explicit as I can without turning red, right?
Right.
And she's not doing that. She's not exactly Ruf Karasakal. Now, according to the Rambam, and this was the whole Chassam Sofer that we started with, if anybody remembers how we started the kickoff of Naravu Rasa, the Chassam Sofer yells and screams, and he says the following. The Rambam says that any Bia Shalom L'Shem Yishus is by definition as Gakidesha, and we have a principle of Eina Loka Mishalim. The whole Mishnah makes no sense. Even in the case of a Kshera, he violates a law and he gets Malkus for Kadesh, according to the Rambam. Say, how are you going to tell me he pays Knas? Take a parsha in. Okay, the Rogachev will say you can't rip it out because Oil Rosh, Oil Shechem. But the whole parsha goes down the tubes. Comes over the Chassam Sofer with the most amazing Chiddush. And he says the following. You know why there's no din of Lokim Mishalim? Because there was no Asra. And if there's no Asra, then there's no din of Malkus, and if he has to pay Knas. I mean, wild. I mean, this is how far the Chassam Sofer went. The Gansa parsha of Mafuta and Ones is all predicated on the assumption there was no Asra. If there was Asra, rip out the two parishes. Why? Because he gets Malkus. That's Kadesh according to the Rama. So you're asking me, in the case of Mafuta, is she a Kadesha? The answer is according to Rambam, she's a Kadesha. And I'll tell you not only that, there's a lot of Kadesha even in the case of Ones. Because the Rambam Shita said any Bia which is not L'Shem Yishus is by definition a violation of the law of Kadesha. So I don't know, Rabosai, you got to go easy on me. I don't know if I can handle Kadesha today. But what I'm saying is that there's, according to the Ramban, there's a whole new halacha here that removes the entire chiv of Knas. And that is that she decides that she gives her goof, she's Moseres as goofa, if she's a Nara, for the sake of making her into a Kli. There's no such Knas then. Tosfos is not operating with this Ramban, because Tosfos is beferish saying that it's all a matter of mechila. We can assume mechila in the case of a ketana yisoma, of a nari yisoma, but if she looks us in the eye and she says, go fly a guide, I'm not interested in mechila, then ain't a finami. Tosus says she'll collect the knas. But you see, it all boils down to mechila. The Ramban is not talking about mechila. The Ramban is talking about a whole new concept. Is this a chiyuv of knas? Is this a bia that generates knas? Is it not a bia that generates knas? And here the Ramban says that in the case of a yisoma and the father's out of the picture, mefuta is not a bia to generate knas. Why? Now the next two paragraphs, because again I see I'm fighting against the clock as usual, we have a chiddush of Rav Kiveg and Afla. I don't remember exactly how they're related to each other. But in any event, they were mechutarim or something. Anyway, the Rav Kiveg says the following. This whole business of the Yerushalmi of Mechila on Knas is Eina Aliva de Hilchasa. It's not Lalocha. Why? Because the Mishnah of Yesoma Mefuta, which establishes that's the whole toothache that we're dealing with today, that Mefuta, in a case of Yesoma, doesn't collect Knas, that only reflects the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Mind-boggling how Rabbi Kiveg came up with this chiddush. All the Tanoim pe'echad, with one exception, Rabbi Kiveg is always a man to himself, hold ein ado machne dovah shelo v'aliyola. Rabbi Akiva is the only Tana who says ado machne dovah shelo v'aliyola, and that's a sugya in Masechet Yevamos. This whole Mishnah of Tana Yesoma Mefuta, that she's part of the Knas, is written and authored by Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says so itself, but not because of the Rabbi Akiva and Yevamos. The Gemara says it's Rabbi Akiva because Rabbi Akiva is the one who holds this arsum and this gash. She doesn't go back to the rishus of her father, so that she has the status of a yesoma. But says Rabbi Kiveger, if you're already attaching this Mishnah, you're attributing it to Rabbi Akiva, let's go all the way. Rabbi Akiva has another shita in Masechet Yevamos. Other makna dovah shelo v'aliyola. That's why a ketana yisoma does not collect knas. You'll ask me, well, how could you be mochelis the knas? It's before hamada bedin. It's a dovah shein b'rishu. So it's Rabbi Akiva who authored this mishnah, and Rabbi Akiva is the one who holds in Masechet Yevamos the other makna dovah shelo v'aliyola. So if there's a haknah in a dovah shelo v'aliyola, there's also a mechila in a dovah shelo v'aliyola. Hence the Mishnah. We don't postulate Rabbi Akiva, and therefore there's no mechila in Knas. Pretty wild, Rabbi Akiva. You see, I like the harifus of Rabbi Akiva. I don't understand the methodology here. Just because the author of that Mishnah on Lamaches here in Ksubis is Rabbi Akiva, therefore I connect him with Rabbi Akiva and Yevamos. I mean, halachud v'halachud dekai. You know, these are two separate issues. You know, there's one issue about whether or not a woman who's a naira and she was nesaris and she goes back after gerusha to her. That's one issue. There's another issue about whether I can be makna dovah shelo v'aliyola. Ain't it sitam with the other? You know, what was one thing I have to do with the other thing? I don't know. But that's where we keep making. Just I want you to put it out there. You know, on your charts. The afla comes up with another harifus, and he says the following. He says that even if mechila could work on a dovah shelo v'aliyolam, he says nevertheless, such a mechila, Rabbi Akiva's mechila on a dovah shelo v'aliyolam, is yachal lachzor bo. Remember, we said over and over again that the fundamental difference between mechila on the one hand and siluk on the other is that in siluk you could have a, you know, the Marit says you could have a chazor from the siluk, but a mechila it's too late. Comes along the flow, the brilliant chiddush. And he says that even in Mechila there's such a thing as Chazor. Why? Because you talk about Rabbi Akiva's Mechila on a Dovah Shelo V'aliyola. It didn't come into existence yet. Then he could be Chazor both from his Mechila. Hence the whole Mishnah goes down the tubes according to Rabbi Akiva. If this Mishnah according to Rabbi Akiva is predicated on a Dovah Shelo V'aliyola, then what do you tell me? Potter Minna Knas is not Potter Minna Knas. Maybe now she's Mochelis. Tomorrow, before I'm on a Bedin, obviously, she can decide that she's not Mochelis. Hey, why not collect the Knas? You know, 50 Shkolm could come in handy. Not our 50 Shkolm. That's worthless. Anyway, but in the paragraph, Yola Mitvarenu, he gives you an overview of the Sugya in one short paragraph. That's why I wanted you to see this paragraph, Yola Mitvarenu. He says the following, Yeshna Sholosh. Taimin, there are three different approaches to this halacha that a ketana, that a naro yisoma is Mocheles and Mafata on the Knas. Number one is Midin Silu, which means that even though it's a Dovah Shalom Aliyolim, you can misalik yourself from a Zchus to collect money afterwards. That's number one. And he says the following, Nafgemina im Yoel Siluk Liachar Bia Kodem Amor B'din. Okay, that has to kind of take... Beis, the second approach is midin mechila. It's not siluk, but it's mechila. Hainu mechila al mamon she's an etch of davar shalom b'liolam, and yet you could have a mechila on davar shalom b'liolam. And finally, the third approach is mazik bershus. That was the Ramban, and again there were different versions of the Ramban and approaches where the Ramban means it's really a knas that's being paid for the hezek, and therefore she could say it's mazik bershus. So maybe what the Ramban means is that this is not considered mesiras gufa on the part. That this is considered Messiah's goof on her part. Again, we have to keep in mind that the whole sugya is predicated on one premise, which you'll see in the paragraph of Matsinu on about the seventh line down. The came of the Bishas Bia. Oh, remember that the Yushalmi came up with a case where the father was alive at the time of the Bia, at the time of the Pitui, but then he died subsequently. So by the time we get to Amar Bidin, We're really in a situation where the father's out of the picture. And in such a case, she can collect knas, even though it's mafuta. Let me go over that one more time. Again, let's just get the mechanics. If the father dies before the bia, or let's say, nisasim niskashim kointer vikiva, before the bia, before the pitui, then everything is in her hands. And then we're going to apply, according to the Yushalmi, the principle of Mechila, etc., and all those different permutations. But what happens in the following case? The father was alive at the time of the bia, and then he died before Hamad Bedin. Would we say now that since she was a mafuta, therefore there's no knas according to again this mandiyoma? So he says, nay. In that case, Tosus says, and all the Rishonim agree that there's no mechila, and she will collect knas. And why is that? They came under Bishas Bia, Haya Via Kayam, since her father was alive at the moment of Bia, Haknas Shaykh Lo, Velo Avi Biyada Limcha. So that any Mechila that results from the Bia itself, meaning her consent to the Bia, is totally null and void. Why? Because the father's alive. So at that moment of the Bia, the knas emerges as a chiyuv that has to be paid to the father. She has no shaykhus to that chiyuv, and her consent to the bia in pitui would not be a mechila. She can't be mochel. It's not hers. It's his. Then the father dies, so we get to Hamad Bidin. Well, what does she say at the time of Hamad Bidin? If she says, I'm ocheles and enochinami, she will not collect the knas. If on the other hand she's tovea him, and again, there's no Hamad Bidin without a tviya, then she has rights to collect the knas. There was a mechila at the time of the bia. The answer is, at that point, she was not in the driver's seat to be mocheles because her father was alive. Okay, this was meant to be the first 20 minutes of today's shiur, but as usual, I'm not very good at party planning. So what we have to do is now, do you have page Kuf Kof Beis? How many minutes do we have? We still have 15 minutes? 20 minutes? Okay, good. Let me just take a drink of water here.
Yeah, we have two coffees here.
All right, good. So I will say, everything we're discussing now is on Daf Chof Tes in Masechta Ksubis. Now we're fast-forwarding to Daf Lamed, which is good. We're making progress. Yeah. So we're up to Daf Lamed. So the Gemara on Daf Lamed has a discussion and then a discussion within a discussion. The first discussion is whether or not Rav Nechunya ben Akana would agree with our Mishnah. The third category of our Mishnah are Chayvei Krisus. And the Mishnah says that he pays Knas. According to Rav Nechunya ben Akana, who would equate Chayvei Krisus with Misas Beis, then you don't pay Knas. You don't pay Knas. Now, why does Rabbi Akiva, I'm sorry, why does Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana equate Chayvei Krisus with Misas Beis? So here we have machlokes on daf lamed between Abaye and Rava. Now between Abaye and Rava, in the middle, we have somebody called Rav Ado bar Ava. And Rav Ado bar Ava tries to slug up Abaye and hence introduce Rava. Abaye understands that according to Rav Nechunya ben Akana, the Torah says in the parasha of Kimei Rami, Ason, Aleph Samach Vav Nun, and the Pasuk Ason appears in the context of Yehuda, who's trying to convince his father Jacob to send down Binyamin. And Binyamin and Yaakov Avinu is very inhibited, to say the least. That's an understatement. And he says about his son Binyamin. Let me just read the pasuk to you so I don't mess up here.
Shema Yikra Asher.
Right, I just want to read the whole pasuk. Just a second. Oh, I have it here. He says the following. Vayomer, Yaakov is speaking. Lo yered bni mochem. Right, this is before Yehuda convinces Yaakov, and he says, Anochi arvenu miyodi t'rakshanu. But before that, Yaakov says, Lo yered bni mochem, ki achiv meis. Who's that?
Yosef,
right? So Yosef already died. You know, there's a track record here. Who else died, by the way, in that family? Rachel. Remember, Rachel died on the Derech. Derech is not good for that lineage. You know, to go out on the road, you know, she dies on the road, and then Yosef dies when he goes out to the Derech, and now you want to take Binyamin out to the Derech. This is like, you know, this is ominous. And then he says, Vahu levado nishar, like the only one left to Rachel now is Binyamin. Ukra'o ason baderech asher telchu ba. So Abaye says that according to Rav Nechunya ben Elkanah, the word ason is identified with an ason bidei shamayim. You know, like all of a sudden, you know, a sunny sky turns gray and there's a storm. Right, that's all bidei shamayim. Man cannot control, and not only that, it's virtually impossible to protect yourself. I was recently in Florida. I can't begin to tell you how much rain I saw in 1 week in Florida. I saw more rain in 1 week in Florida than I'll see in a lifetime here in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, it got to the point where cars were literally submerged in water. They couldn't move. I had a meeting with one of my former students who lives in Miami, and we were meant to meet halfway up in Bell Harbor. And he said he was praying that he would make it to the meeting because cars were not moving. That's how much rain there was. The lightning was incredible, by the way. I never saw lightning like this in my life. I mean, you could literally see the bright, you know, lights, the electricity going up and down in the sky. So that's called bidei shamayim. Now, you could always ask the question, so, you know, why is Yaakov, you know, if it's bidei shamayim, you know, we're meant to go. But still, nevertheless, you know, there's a difference between living inside a house and going out to Derech. You know, even if it's Bidei Shamayim, there's certain protections that you have to take. So Yaakov... Right, you know, you go out on the Derech, it's very, you know, it's very dangerous. And there's a track record here. I mean, Rachel died by Derech and Yosef died by Derech. But you see clearly that the word ason is referring to a tragedy bidei shamayim. And if we plug in the word ason back into the parsha of Kimlei the Rabbi, where it says that, I'll read the parsha to you in Mishpatim. You just give me a second. I'd like to get the whole, if we can get the whole pasuk. Yeah, here's the whole pasuk. Ki natsu anashim, they're fighting with each other. V'nagfu isha hara, v'yatzu yiladeha. The loya son anoshi anesh, and then kasha yashisalav bala isha v'nasan v'plilim. In other words, if the vlad was killed, then the nogev has to pay dmei v'lonos. But that's only because the loya ason. If there would have been an ason, he doesn't have to pay. So what does the word ason mean? So we're talking now about bidei shamayim, and therefore, if there was an ason bidei shamayim, then loya anesh, then he doesn't pay. And what's an ason bidei shamayim? That's kares. So Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana derives from here that in a case of kares, he doesn't pay damages. So Rav Ado bar Acha attacks Abaye, and he says that that this is not right, and that's not pshat in the word ason. Ason has to do with what's called aryeh v'gadve, which is bidei adam. That Yaakov was worried about marauders, you know, attackers, and they would jeopardize Binyamin's life. That's the whole sugya over here of Rav Ado bar Ava. And then finally, the Gemara comes up with Rav has a whole different explanation from the Chunya ben Akana, and that's based on a different parsha in the Torah. I'll read to you this parsha, and this is in, I think it's in Vayikra. Let me just make sure. This is on Daf Lamed Amud Beis. Rava says it's based on a pasuk of Molech. What happened in the case of no saying Mizaro la Molech? So im halem yalimu ama oritze seinem in a ishahu bitito Mizaro la Molech levilti amiso so v'samti ani es panai. So Rava says that this no saying Zaro Lamolch it's a capital crime, he's meant to be put to death. If he wasn't put to death, Hashem says Vichrati, I'll take care of him. Vichrati is Miloshin Kares. And here Rava formulates Rav Nachunya ben Akana that Kares is Bimokom Misas Bezdin. That Kares is a replacement for Misas Bezdin. And the Torah went out of its way to equate in this parsha Kares with Misas Bezdin. Omra Torah, Kares Shali Kemisa Shalehem Ma Misa Shalehem Potur Minatashlumin Af Kares Shali Potur Minatashlumin. And then the Gemara says, "My ikar ben Rava l'Abaye." So, if you take a look on page Kuf Chaf Aleph, I think it is. No, let me correct that. Kuf Chaf Gimel, and it's a paragraph that starts, "But Gemara, my ikar ben Rava l'Abaye," on the right column on the bottom, on Kuf Chaf Gimel. Hello, anybody home?
Yeah.
Okay. So he says the following. Now what we're going to start now, we'll have to finish tomorrow, because this is a really profound sugya that he's about to enter into. He says the following. I think this is Tafla, if I'm not mistaken. If somebody could check out the footnotes. Number, what is it? Number Tess, I think it is.
Yeah,
Tafla. Matzina Lameimer. Just the methodology is fascinating to me. That Flo wants to come up with his own nafkamina. Why didn't the Gemara think of my nafkamina? You know, ikamenayu. Again, we don't know what the Gemara's nafkamina is, but it's not that Flo's nafkamina. Miso Malkus, o kares u Malkus. What's the deal in a case of Miso u Malkus? So that Flo is going to claim that depends upon this machlokus between Abaye and Rav. Let's see how he comes up with that calculation. The Gemara later on says the following: V'loya son only addresses tashlume mamon, because in that parsha of ki notzu etc. it says d'mei v'loda, so it's all about monetary payments, and the Torah says that im ye ason he doesn't pay monetary pays. But the Gemara says we need an entirely different source for the following question: Misa umaman or Misa and Malkus. Let's focus for a moment on Misa umalkus. The man violates two isurim, simultaneously. For one he's chayav Misa, for the other he's chayav Malkus. Do we give him the Malkus? So the answer is no, but that's derived from a different pasuk. Kidei rishaso mishum risha achas atom achayvo v'yatom achayvo mishum shtei rishoyos. So it means the following: that the pasuk ason is not going to be sufficient to teach me anything about the case of miso malkus. For the case of miso malkus, I need another drasha of kidei rishaso. The case of ason is only going to be able to teach me dmei velados, which means that since he's chayiv kares, let's go according to him, the chunya ben akana, he doesn't pay damages for dmei velados. But it doesn't tell me a thing about a case where he's chayiv misa or kares, and at the same time he's chayiv malkus. For that, we need another drasha of Kidei Rishasa. Ulefize la baye the yolif chay mekrisus migzer shavu the ason ason should ever gabi moman ain lanu shetehe misa vide shamayim poteres elami mamon velomi malchus. In other words, Abai sees in the word ason to defend Rabbi Nachman a gavaldig chiddush that even if it's not Bezdin who's meeting out the punishment up on earth, it's in Shamayim. Nevertheless, he doesn't get the other chiv. What was the other chiv in the parasha of Asan? Mama. How do I know that even in the case of a onish bidei Shamayim, let's call it misa bidei Shamayim, let's call it kares, how do we know that even in that case he doesn't get Malkus? Beis Din is only meeting out one punishment, and that's Malkus. Well, what are you going to tell me? That the Chiyuv Kares is going to knock off Malkus? How do you know that? The Parsha of Ason only refers to Mamon. Ela what? Kidei Rishasa, but Kidei Rishasa is talking to Beis Din. In other words, we're talking about an Onish Bidei Shamayim. We have no source for an Onish Bidei Odom. We have no source for an Onish Bidei Shamayim to knock off the Chiyuv Malkus. However, Mashenkin, I wanted to say, L'Rava, D'yolif le'mi kareis shali kemisa shalahem. The Torah is declaring in the parasha of Molech that my kareis is a substitute for misa. In other words, if you guys down here in the Bezdin Shalmat, if you don't implement the chi of misa, I'll take care of it. I'll do it up in Shemayim. You don't have to worry about it. And we're going to see that for each misa, there's a parallel kind of misa bidei Shemayim. Is Memele, is Karis Poteris Gami Malkus? Right? If the Torah is equating, upgrading the status of Karis to that of Misa, then whatever din applies to Misa down here is going to apply to Karis up there. And therefore, if the person incurred a Chiv Karis and at the same time a Chiv Malkus, then he's not going to get Malkus because it's exactly equivalent to the case of Misa Malkus, which is derived from Kedei Rishasa. So it means like that. That Enoch Inami Kedei Rishasa is addressing Beis Din, but nevertheless, there is such a thing as another Beis Din, a higher court, that's going to fill in for our Beis Din and is going to really step into our Beis Din's shoes. And that's the case of Misa Bidei Shamayim, because Misa Bidei Shamayim or Kares is considered equivalent to Misa. Misa Shali or Kares Shali, Ke Misa Shalachem. That's Rava. And remember, Rav says it's a brilliant chiddush of the flaw. I mean, he doesn't need my agreement. But look at this, the brilliance here. He's saying the following, that according to Rava, the thrust of what Rav Nachum Ben Hakon is saying is that Kares equals Misa. That what we don't implement here is implemented by the Beis Din Shel Shamayim. Now just tell me what the laws that apply to Misa in Beis Din Shalmata, you know, and then we'll apply it by definition, by extension, to Karetz. Masha'ekin koi tabaye, that's not what Rav Nachum Ben Hakon is saying. He's not saying that Karetz is a substitute for Misa. He's saying that the principle of Kimlei Rabbani applies, based on Ason, to even to a case of a Karetz. But that's only to knock off Mamon in the case of Ason. But how do we know that the Kares is enough to knock off Malkus? So what are you going to tell me? Kedei Rishasa, but Kedei Rishasa is a case of Misa. It's not a case of Malkus. How do we know that in the case of Misa and Malkus, he doesn't get Malkus? What's the basis for that? It can't be Kedei Rishasa in the case of Misa Bidei Shamayim or Kares Bidei Shamayim because Kedei Rishasa was addressing Beis Din. El, what are you going to tell me? That I'm going to derive from Ason. I can only derive from Ason a case of Chiyuv Mamon, but not a case of a chiyuv Malkus. All right, Rabosa, we'll stop here. Again, we have to see how the Aflah figures, you know, wiggles out of this, because again, it's such a brilliant Maibeinayu that you wonder why the Gemara didn't offer this as an answer to Maibeinayu. Which is the first page that we gave? Do we photocopy Kuf? I always forget. Sammy, you're good at this. What was the first page in the second section, I mean?
Kuf Chav Bet, I think.
Oh, so you have Kuf Chav Bet. All right, so maybe we'll get a chance to touch on some of the points in Kuf Chav Bet. Kuf Chav Bet is a little bit more agadita. It borders on agadita. When can you rely on your own security? When do you have to rely on Hashem protecting you? And all those issues, that's on Kuf Chav Bet. Kuf Chav Gimel, on the other hand, is much more the lumdus of the sugya and Abai Varocha and the whole issue of Kimlev the Rabbi. It's all right here on this page. Okay, then, gentlemen, to have a great day. And we'll see you whenever you can come. You know, it's all voluntary. Yeah, you told me. You told me. You have. I thought you were going to come yesterday, but I misunderstood you.
They call her in for some pretests.
Right. So we covered a good deal, no? Baruch Hashem. A lot of material here, a lot of svaras.
I saw a beautiful machshava yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm going to use the bar mitzvah for my grandson. It says that Yaakov says to Her Osi Elokim Dama Zahecha. So the pashuk shot is.
This is what he meets Esav?
What?
When he meets Esav, what are we talking about? What are we talking about?
Yaakov says to Yosef.
Oh, when he meets reunification with Yosef.
Here Hashem Osi Esarecha. So the pashuk shot is, I lived long enough, I saw my children, my grandchildren. But the grammar is wrong. It should be Kihera Li Esarecha.
Instead it says Osi, what is it?
Pashuk shot, Osi. Shot is that he sees his grandchildren that are living like he wants.
Oh, Osi, I mean, they have the legacy.
He sees himself and the grandchildren.
They continue in his path.
Excellent. Very nice.
Beautiful.
I'm going to use it too fast.
So,
copyright, but you have to pay.
There's a joke I'm using that tell you about the Mitria, the Sefer.
No.
You know, Baruch Hashem, the bar mitzvahs today. In my day, most of the kids who were bar mitzvah were not very much. So they used to give them a sefer and an umbrella. What's a pshat? They gave an umbrella so they would open something.
If not the sefer, at least they'll open the umbrella. Very good. But what was the story you told me last week? You know, you had a...
Do I remember?
Oh, shucks.
About my family and your family?
Yeah. How did it go? There was a father and a mother. They told them two opposite things.
Where did the babies come from? Adam and Chava had a baby. Abba, long time ago, there was this big monkey, and it had a baby monkey. It was a little different. Each generation was a little different. He goes, mother said, I understand. You said one thing. I said one thing. Mother says, I was talking about my side of family. Your father's talking about his side of family. You got to be careful where you said.
Right. Yeah. Darwinism, you know.
But the one you can use is they asked the fellow to speak, and they gave him 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
And this guy was at Darshan, he didn't stop. It was 5 minutes and 7 minutes. And they coughed and they grabbed his bag and it nothing helped. Finally, the guy got up in front of everyone like this.
Meaning five hands, meaning five fingers. Meaning Darshan. That all he has is 5 minutes.
I said, good news for you. They just gave me another 5 minutes.
Very good. Excellent.